Another day is here, and you're ready for it. What to wear? Check. Breakfast, lunch, and dinner? Check. Planning for what's next and how to save for it? That's where Bank of America can help. For your financial to-dos, Bank of America has experts ready to help get you closer to your goals. Get started at one of our local financial centers or 24-7 in our mobile banking app. Find a location near you at bankofamerica.com/talktous. What would you like the power to do? Mobile banking requires downloading the app and is only available for select devices. Message and data rates may apply. Bank of America NA, member FDIC.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
Step into the world of power, loyalty, and luck.
I'm gonna make him an offer he can't refuse.
With family, cannolis, and spins mean everything.
Now, you wanna get mixed up in the family business.
Introducing The Godfather at ChumbaCasino.com. Test your luck in the shadowy world of The Godfather slot.
Someday, I will call upon you to do a service for me.
Play The Godfather, now at ChumbaCasino.com.
Welcome to the family.
No purchase necessary. VGW Group. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus. Terms and conditions apply.
It's time for today's Lucky Land horoscope with Victoria Cash.
Life's gotten mundane, so shake up the daily routine and be adventurous with a trip to Lucky Land. You know what they say, your chance to win starts with a spin. So go to LuckyLandSlots.com to play over 100 social casino-style games for free for your chance to redeem some serious prizes. Get lucky today at LuckyLandSlots.com.
Available to players in the U.S., excluding Washington and Michigan. No purchase necessary. VGW Group. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus. Terms and conditions apply.
Step into the world of power, loyalty, and luck.
I'm gonna make him an offer he can't refuse.
With family, cannolis, and spins mean everything.
Now, you wanna get mixed up in the family business.
Introducing The Godfather at ChumbaCasino.com. Test your luck in the shadowy world of The Godfather slot.
Someday, I will call upon you to do a service for me.
Play The Godfather, now at ChumbaCasino.com.
Welcome to the family.
No purchase necessary. VGW Group. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus. Terms and conditions apply.
Monarch, Legacy of Monsters, Episode 9 is over, but we are just getting started here on post-show recaps. I am Adam H., and I have been stuck inside this podcast for seemingly 20 years, or actually, it really only has felt like 5 seconds, but maybe to those who are listening, it's just years and years and years. It's been so long, so you probably should just put me in a retirement home, which, by the way, I would love to go into a retirement home. Are you kidding me? Someone's like making me food all the time. I could just walk around and play pool or darts or what. My grandpa's in a retirement home. I just every part of it, we'd go over, we'd like play pool, we'd always eat BLTs. Anyway, like I said before, I'm Adam H. This is episode 9 of Monarch. I'm not alone. Someone who would probably send me right into the Hollow Earth if he could. It's Todd Delay Brain. How are you?
I'm good. Just doing what I usually do, pouring gasoline on fires I don't understand, you know.
Yeah. That's good. Yeah, that's all. I mean, if the bear is not poked, it is someone's responsibility to poke it. You can't just not poke it. You know, you have to see if it jiggles or something. I don't know. This whole show could basically, and well, this universe as a whole, to be honest with you, including the movies, could basically be described as, what if we did some dumb stuff and found out what happened? You know, we effed around and we're finding out, okay, throughout this show, what's going on. We're all over the place. We are all up in the Hollow Earth. We get the massive reveal at the end, which it's really tough. Todd, should we have seen this coming earlier than this episode? Because I, you know, to give a little credit to myself, but only a little, When we were early on in the episode and they were like, there's a signal coming from the Hollow Earth, I was like, okay, so Keiko's alive, right? Like, okay, so like that's what's going on. But this is episode 9. And the first time I thought that was earlier in episode 9. should I have been thinking this before? Are we just like not putting things? Because some of I really do think sometimes, Todd, we're like pretty on it with some of the stuff, the age stuff, how time works differently, like the connections and stuff. I'm kind of impressed by our own abilities. But then I would never, ever have predicted Keiko still being alive here in episode 9. But here we are.
I believe in the first episode, the fact that we didn't see Keiko's body, I was a little bit like, is she really dead? And but then like we got no more like, you know, intimations that she might be alive. There's nothing else suggested from anything Lee said or anything that Monarch has said that to make think that they thought that she was alive. The fact that Lee had been to the Hollow Earth, like, oh, okay. Maybe they went to find her and they couldn't or something. I don't know. I don't think they made it really obvious that she definitely would be alive, except for the fact that we never saw her body. The fact that we never saw her body should have made us go, oh, there's a possibility she's alive, which it did in the first episode, but then we like quickly moved past that time, went to earlier times. So yeah, it had completely fallen off my radar. And it has crossed my mind occasionally, like, is she maybe still there? But I wasn't really holding out hope until the signal thing. And then the signal thing happened, like, oh, wow. Oh, boy. Maybe she is. Then we get that last shot of her in her best Green Arrow pose. Yeah,
it's cool.
Take us back.
Yeah, it's very, very cool. I really did like the reveal. And I actually kind of liked this episode too. I thought it was done in a pretty interesting way. We got kind of multiple different time periods. We're in multiple different settings. The look of the Hollow Earth, even though we're not there for very long, actually, I really enjoyed the look of it. And that has been true kind of every time we've seen glimpses of it. I don't know if it's like a complaint or a fault or whatever. I would have loved to have seen a full, more fleshed out interaction with other Mutos and other kind of Titans down in the Hollow Earth. We got kind of the one still shot of the, I don't know what we're going to call it. I don't know what there is. We got kind of got the one still shot. And then we saw the thing at the end, which got shot by Keiko. So it's not like we got nothing. But I do think that if I'm thinking of like, let's go to weird location where there's going to be a lot more Titans, I'm thinking of like the beginning of, you know, beginning, middle, early, whatever, when they're getting to Skull Island, basically, and we're just kind of like walking around and we see a bunch of different creatures kind of all over the place. That was sort of the vibe I was hoping we would get here. And we didn't really get that to a full extent, but I did really like the look of it. And I think the storytelling is interesting. That being said, I still don't fully understand what everyone is trying to do / how we can quote unquote resolve this. And then also we get freaking Hiroshi at the end. Todd, this was a weird episode. Actually, now that I'm like thinking about this, the Hiroshi stuff really threw me. I only got to watch this once and I just finished it. So I was kind of distracted by the cool reveal at the end. And now I'm like remembering Hiroshi just shows back up and is with Katara then. There's some weird stuff that's going on here. But what do you think of here overall of the penultimate episode? We only have one more left.
I know it's wild that they're going to try to resolve all of this in the next episode. But yeah, which makes me think that next episode is going to be the Hiroshi flashback episode. I feel like we're pretty much done with the past of Lee and Billy and all. It might be a Keiko flashback episode, though. We might get to see like her time there. You know, I thought it was really good. I'm glad that we got some time in the Hollow Earth. I'm glad that we finally got the answer to Lee's age. We didn't get the answer to Hiroshi's age, except for the fact that I had a typo in our document last time, so we kept saying 1945 when I meant 1955. So he added like 10 years onto Hiroshi's age. I still think he's like looking pretty good for the age he would be, but he's not quite as old as we were thinking last time. So that's on me for messing that up. But overall, yeah, I really enjoyed it. The Hiroshi of it all at the end is a little odd, but it seems perfectly in keeping with what we've seen of Hiroshi. He seems pretty flighty these days for someone who was like so like buttoned down and stern whenever he dealt with Lee in the 80s. And this is a very different Hiroshi. And I'm really hoping we do get a Hiroshi flashback next episode. A, so we can figure out what the hell is going on with him in general, but also so we can see like, you know, how has he gone from the guy who threw his Uncle Lee in this retirement home, basically locked him off and threw away the key, to this guy who's now like running all over the world trying to do stuff against Monarch's wishes. I really want to dig into the Hiroshi of it all next episode, and I'm hoping that they do.
Yeah, that's interesting. I don't, because the one thing I don't know is where I actually would want them to flash back to in Hiroshi's past, right? Because we kind of have a couple options, just based on the time, we have a couple options. I don't know exactly where I'd want them to go, but I do agree that Hiroshi needs to be a big part of the next episode. That being said, the split of the group, I think, makes for the next episode kind of having a lot to do just in terms of any kind of resolution for all of the characters. I mean, we're kind of all over the place without seemingly nothing's gonna be easy, but even without like a clear way out / back / up / forward, however you want to do it, right? Like, are we gonna do this like big time jump where some people are aged, and now we're kind of gonna be in a weird situation here where, let's assume everyone who's in the Hollow Earth gets out, we have Keiko, who is going to be way younger than Hiroshi and Lee, and then we're going to have, I mean, it's just going to be a mess. I don't even want to, like, we'll talk about this a little bit later. It's going to be a mess if everyone gets out, timeline wise.
Yeah. The temporal mechanics of the Hollow Earth are kind of all over the place. And I don't think there was really any indication in Godzilla versus Kong about that. There might be like a small throwaway line, maybe, but overall, like, we saw the people like go to the Hollow Earth and come back without there being any sort of like weirdness. But also, the tunnel they went through was stable, and the tunnel that Lee went through the first time definitely was not stable. So maybe that has a little bit to do with it. I'm not sure.
It certainly could be. I don't know. We'll talk about it. Okay. Let's get into this. First and foremost, there's only two episodes of this left, including this one. Two podcasts left, rather. You're watching the second to last one. There's only one podcast left. I don't know. I'm losing my mind today. This is the penultimate episode. You're only going to hear from us one more time after this. But where you can keep up with us, though, postyourrecaps.com/subscribe. We're going to be here all the way through. We're going to be here for the final episode next week. But of course, come follow us, postyourrecaps.com/subscribe. Let's get into this season 1, episode 9, entitled Axis Mundi. I don't know. Presumably, this is where we are in the Hollow Earth, is my understanding of this.
Axis Mundi, it's a phrase that basically means like drawing a line from the heavens to the earth to the center of the earth. It's kind of basically.
Oh, okay. Well, yeah. Excellent. So it still could be maybe in reference to going all the way down. Maybe that's where, I don't know. Anyway, let's start all the way back. The furthest back that we go here, 1962, where we see Billy and Lee telling Hiroshi that Lee is going on a trip, maybe dangerous. I did really like this flashback sequence here. And he promises he'll be back soon. And what we see is we see Lee give Hiroshi his lucky pocket knife. He's like, well, one of these days I'm going to get you a real one. But so this is not it. I'm not giving you this, but hold on to this until I return. And it turns out this trip is an expedition to the Hollow Earth. It's codenamed Project Hourglass. And this is interesting because, like, holy smokes, this is a very dangerous mission. I don't know that, like, the most important thing that I'm going to be doing before a big dangerous mission is giving my hypothetical nephew here a pocket knife and then being like, this isn't actually yours. I'm gonna come back and give you another one here when I'm back. But Todd, are you a pocket knife guy?
I'm not a pocket knife guy. I'm not a knife guy in general. The only knife that I own, like outside like kitchen knives, is a knife that I got from a friend as like a groomsman gift. No, it was a groomsman at the wedding. Like, he got all of his groomsmen like a really nice knife. And all the other grooms were like, oh, this is so cool. And I'm like, thank you.
Is it like a kitchen knife? Is it like a...
No, it's
like a hatchet type situation you would maybe use like for a rope.
That's like a much more like outdoorsy knife if you're like camping and things like that. That type of thing, because pretty much everyone else in the group were much more outdoorsy type people than I was. So everyone got the same thing. So I like, I have this. So I have that knife, which is still in its packaging.
I was going to say, if it was like a really nice, like chef's knife, I'd be like, oh, okay, this is nice. This is very interesting. I cook a lot. If I'm an outdoor knife, I don't really know what I'm using that for. Yeah, I mean, I don't know.
We are both notoriously indoor kids.
Yeah, we're I'm like as indoor as it gets. I would not be interested in this Hollow Earth situation. But their plan, Todd, is they are going to use their Titan bait, which we have seen be a very big piece of this show, actually, which I actually really do like, considering its past, you know, kind of history on in the universe, in the MonsterVerse here. But their plan is to lure Titan up to the rift to basically stabilize it so that while the Titan is kind of coming up, they just like slip right on by. Kind of a genius plan that I like had really not, you know, thought of. So their plan, Lee's team is going to enter, doesn't go very well because, well, it's not entirely clear why. It destabilizes in some capacity. Maybe the Titan wasn't slippery enough, and I don't know. It kind of like all goes to hell here, and we get this kind of like little metal tornado situation of everything going on there. And it covers up the rift entrance. So not a flawless executed plan here to get down into the Hollow Earth.
Nope. But it does, correspond to the lore of Godzilla versus Kong, because the big part of that was they had to get Kong to go with them to the rift that they were going to go through so that they could actually get through and stabilize it. So I like that piece of lore is consistent, even if the whole gravity switch thing from that movie still has not really been addressed at all. But yeah, it was an interesting plan. Like I said, they were trying to let this thing think that there was going to be lots of radiation, and then they turned the emitter off and it was partway up, so it didn't come out and wreak hell on all of Kansas, as General Puckett said. And then it went back down. So I don't know if the fact, maybe they cut bait too soon. Maybe that was a problem, that they thought that it was successful, but the thing, because it turned around, it caused the rift to kind of like feedback. Not quite sure what happened, but it's like very, very dramatic results. At first, you just see like the antennas on the trailer start to spark a little bit and bend a little bit, but then this whole vortex opens up. It's like ripping up parts of like the walkway. It's like this one poor Monarch guy just gets completely, you know, smashed by this huge piece of walkway, just flying the air and careening into him, and it destroys the entire metal structure that sent the bathysphere down with Lena's team. And yeah, it was just a complete catastrophe, as Puckett refers to it later.
Yeah, you know what? One of the consistencies throughout all of these kind of past scenes, whenever they're about to do a thing, they set up like these tents and neatly lined up chairs, and everyone like makes a day of it. It's like we're going to a movie. It's like this is like a big event. Let's all get dressed up and go out to this event, and we're all, you know, sitting in line to watch some big thing, whether it's kill Godzilla, or I don't know, go into the earth and set up a Titan bait and drop in there. These don't seem like events that I'm this is like basically if I'm going to watch like a high school basketball game or a like Shakespeare in the Park situation. Like, these are just very like neat to set up places in the public place for these just major events, and they're just like sitting there hanging out, just, you know, basically like, okay, you know what it is? They're about to go watch like a regatta. That's like what this vibe is. Everyone's all dressed up and gussied up, and we're about to make a day on the town, like one of those situations. They're about to go watch like a little sailing competition, and it doesn't go well at all, ever.
It's because they're getting ready to plant their flag in underspace, as Puckett says. Because he talked a little bit like outer space, pshaw, who cares about outer space? We're going to underspace. You know, take that, Kennedy.
Are you a space guy or like an ocean guy? Like, which of those is like more enticing to you or intriguing to you?
Oh, that's an interesting question. I think I'm more intrigued by outer space and what could be out there, but I would be much more likely to go into the ocean than travel up into outer space, because it's
really okay.
Just the lot of chance, more chance for things to go catastrophically wrong without the atmosphere, I think.
Yeah, I mean,
both of them are pretty dangerous. I mean, if you're talking about going like to the depths of the ocean, that's pretty awful too. So, I mean, again, I'm an indoor kid, so I'm probably not going to go to either one of them. Mm-hmm. But I think just in general, outer space is kind of more interesting. Although I think like the mysteries of what's its exit at the bottom of the ocean is pretty interesting as well, but I think I always would lean more towards outer space than oceans.
I just always think it's wild that like we know what is millions and millions and millions of miles away one direction, but if we point the other way, we have no idea what's 20 miles that way. That's just always very interesting to me. That being said, I'm not going to any of these places. What's down at the bottom of the ocean and what's out in deep outer space, that is not my business. Okay. That is not my job to figure out. It's fine. Okay. So this is going very poorly. Billy is like, okay, well, I can't let this go. I have to figure out something here. I have to keep pursuing this because I'm not crazy. Okay. I know what's going on here. And Puckett's basically like, hey, do you want your kid to be an orphan? Like, they've already lost so much family because of this. Like, can you not go off the deep end here? Cut it out. And to be honest with you, kind of has a little bit of a point. How many close loved ones do you need to lose to the same reason before you're like, maybe I should find a different line of work?
Yeah. I will say, I think this is the most sympathetic that General Puckett has been the entire series, this conversation, because like he and Billy are talking to each other like they're friends, even like the way that they talk to each other is like Billy calls him, I think Billy calls him Buck. I don't think Billy calls him General in this scene. He actually calls him Buck, and Puckett calls him Billy. They're not Dr. Randa or General or anything like that. It's like they've been working together for several years now, and there is actually a little bit of like some mutual respect that they built for each other, which is vastly different from the first time that they interacted. So I thought that was really interesting to see, like their relationship has actually grown. But yeah, I think Puckett has like a really good point here. And he also is like, you know, you're not the only one that lost a friend. Lee was my friend too. Lee's my friend before he was your friend. And he's like, you know, it's like, it's old men's job to start wars and young men's jobs to fight them. And it's so much harder to deal with whenever you know the young men. You know, it's like, Lee was my friend. Like, I sent him on this mission. And so I feel the guilt, you know, just as much as you do, if not more. I feel the pain as you do. But, you know, if you continue on this path, you know, your son is going to lose, you know, everything. So you need to think about that. So I think that's a great point. And I think if Billy was talking more in terms like, we've got to get back down there, we got to find Lee, he's alive and everything, he doesn't quite say that. He's more on that, I need to know the truth of what happened, which is the big sticking point for the DOD on whether they will give them funding or not. Because it's not just that things went wrong, it's like things went wrong and you don't know why. And Billy's like, well, they give us money, we're never going to find out why. But it's like, DOD isn't big on testing theories when it costs lives. Which I say, since when? But I think Puckett really has an excellent point here that Billy needs to step back and think things through and not go off the deep end because his son's going to lose him. And as we know, he doesn't necessarily, you know, listen. Now, if he listens at first and then changes, because the next thing we know about Billy is, you know, about a decade down the road, and Skull Island of it all. So we don't know exactly what happened in between this time. But obviously, at some point, he still is like, no, I need to go and figure out. And he was still like looking for Hollow Earth theories on Skull Island. That was like a big, big plot point in Skull Island as well, talking about the Hollow Earth of it all. So, well, and it's still in Tinfoil Hat Land.
Certainly been like a big point throughout the series of it's the Randa files, right? Like, so these are the files that we're kind of talking about of what he was pursuing. But we're going to flash forward a little bit here because we obviously know we've seen this in the present day. We've seen 8 episodes of this. Lee's not dead. Okay. He wakes up in an isolation tent in a Monarch facility and he's like, I need Bill. And Bill's, you know, obviously he's not there, although we don't necessarily know that this is 20 years later at this particular point. We'll find that out in a second. And he starts to go on a hunger strike. He's like, hey, I need Bill. And I don't trust this food. We see like this nurse come in and bring him one of these like special Christmas cookies, which I would love a Christmas cookie at any point. If anyone wants to bring me those special Christmas cookies, I'm down. Those look like the shortbread ones that are in the like shape and they have like the sprinkle outline situation. They looked very good anyway. And instead of just eating the cookie like a nice person who gave you a cookie, he takes her captive and basically threatens to kill her. He's like, I need Bill. And we see a man show up and is, you know, say, hey, Lee, Bill is dead. And also, I'm Hiroshi. And here's this knife. Remember the knife? The knife you gave me? And Lee just collapses. And we see, you know, a little bit of a Hiroshi in the past here. First of all, tough look for that nurse, first and foremost. Trying to bring the guy a cookie and gets just rocked. That's unfortunate. However, Hiroshi, more Hiroshi in the past.
Yeah. So I'm not 100% sure because I have a little bit of face blindness, but I think that might be Kentaro's mom as the nurse.
Oh, okay. I think she was wearing a mask for some of it, and so I like didn't pick that up. Also, Kentaro's mom has not been in the show a lot, so that's a little difficult there. But that's interesting. Okay.
Yeah. Yeah, because I'm pretty sure because the scene that follows where Hiroshi apologizes to the nurse and gives her flowers and they have this kind of meaningful conversation. I'm looking going, is that Kentaro's mom? Hmm. Is that who that is? And then the next scene, she looks a little bit older and all. But again, I'm just like, ah. But once you have like a different hair, someone has a different hairstyle, it throws me a lot of times. But I think that might have been Emiko that was that Lee threatened and then Hiroshi bonded with. I'm not 100% sure, but I think it may. And it's hard to tell because the credits don't give anything away. I don't know if they ever referred to her by name in the scene, but this could be the meet cute. The meet cute between Hiroshi and Emiko is like, hey, remember my uncle held you at knife point? You know, hey,
how romantic, how attractive that is. He does apologize here, and then he starts to explain. Okay, well, I was down in the Hollow Earth, and basically it went about as poorly as it could go as soon as we got there. And we see some flashes to him kind of down there and he got there. Basically, it was a Titan attack with an instance. Okay, we tried to take some pictures and do some, you know, insert science words, whatever. And energy bursts were just killing the crew and Titans were flying around everywhere. We see some of these flashes. There is that one still shot that I was talking about before where we kind of like pan around a little bit and see this unnamed Titan. I don't know the name of it. There were some tentacles, I think, maybe a couple eyeballs. I don't know what was going on there, but some scary Titans in the situation. We obviously saw the portal as well in that. But basically, things did not go well at all, and a new rift opened, and Lee got sucked through that and is now out. What do you think of this sort of like flash down to the Hollow Earth in this this past kind of 1980s storyline?
I thought it was an interesting way to do it. Like you, I would have liked to have seen a little bit more action, but I do think like the kind of still shots with like the kind of bullet time rotation around was kind of interesting. First, you had the not so much with the Titan attack, but then you have the shot of one of the other crew members like getting zapped by the energy discharge. I thought that looked really cool, like the freeze frame of them kind of like in, you know, their arms sort out as this bolt of like multicolored lightning, you're shooting from the ground up through them, up to the sky. I thought that was like a really cool shot. And I think it wouldn't have looked as cool if they just got zapped in real time. I think like for that, the still shot was really, really cool. And it made me okay with the still shot of the Titan because I thought that looked really cool.
Yeah, I think in my perfect world, we get more of the Titan in like real time, and then we get the still shot of the non-Titan stuff, right? Because if we're going to like add in technology and effects, that's fine if that's like more of a still situation. But yeah, if we're going to add in like monsters and creatures, I want to see them being monsters and creatures, not just like a picture, you know?
Yeah, I think my only thing I don't like about this sequence is it feels like Lee was only in the Hollow Earth for like 5 minutes. I mean, we don't know for sure how long it was because like they get out, they bury one of their people because he was dead already. We see him like kind of like have his helmet on a stick, and then the Titan attacks. Then there's like enough time for him to figure out about the lightning stuff because he knows about that later. And then, you know, so basically he's the only one left surviving, and then this other Titan appears and sucks him back into the real world. But at most, it was like maybe half a day once everything is said and done, from what we can tell.
My guess, 20 minutes. That was watching the and I guess like my follow up to that is that okay? Like, do you have a problem with that? Because at least for me personally, I don't think it was clear exactly how much time. But I think we're supposed to get the intention. This was quick. He was only in there for a little bit because he is flabbergasted when he figures out, you know, what day it is. He did not expect Hiroshi to be so grown up.
Yeah, and so I'm not opposed to it all. I just it's one of those things that they're only there for 20 minutes and 20 years pass.
Yeah.
And Keiko's been down there for whoever knows how long, and she hasn't aged. But what's going to happen when the rest of them try to come back? I just don't know how if they're going to give any explanations for how the timey-wiminess of it all works. And I don't necessarily need them to explain it, but even if it's just like a throwaway, you know, time goes weird around the Titans, you never know, you know, how much time it doesn't, it's not a one-to-one thing. It's very Fey Realm from D&D where time is like, you never know for sure how much time is going to pass whenever you go from one realm to another. And so I'm fine with it in theory, but I do wish that there was, I wish he'd spent a little bit more time there, I guess, is just in general, even outside of the timey-wiminess of it all, I kind of wish that Lee had spent more time in that realm to justify more his knowledge of things and him thinking he knows how everything works. And we'll talk about a little bit more, I guess, at the end of the sequence. But I feel like Lee going straight from this to the retirement community and never leaving the retirement community again leaves some questions for me about a lot of the knowledge he has and contacts that he has and that sort of stuff. I don't know that that fully lines up for me. It feels like there's some, maybe some inconsistencies there. And maybe Lee's not a reliable narrator and there's more that he isn't telling, because all of this is being related to May, kind of is what we're being led to believe. A lot of that is like him telling May what happened. But we also see a lot of it, so it's not all just him narrating to May.
Yeah.
So I'm not 100% sure, but I just, there are just a couple of things here that I wish were a little bit tighter. But in general, I like the concept of it. I like the idea of it. I like what we saw, but I just wanted something a little bit more concrete about a couple of aspects of it.
Well, and I think maybe the unfortunate part to some extent here is if we wanted to go and add some stuff to it, like next episode, if we wanted to, you know, fill in some of these blanks, I don't really think there's time.
Oh,
you know what I mean? I just don't think that there's another, you know, we're talking about kind of Lee having too much information or too much knowledge. I don't think we have time to figure out where he might have gotten any more knowledge. It just doesn't exist. The unless the next episode is like 3 hours long and we're going to resolve everything and do that, which I am very confident that it's not. We just don't have time. So we'll see. Because my original thought here was, did he go back into the Hollow Earth at some point afterwards? Did he and Hiroshi reconnect at some point? Or maybe Hiroshi visited the retirement home at some point and talked to Lee after G-Day, but before the year after when we're talking. That's sort of my only thought, is maybe there's a conversation that happened there, but I don't know.
Yeah, I think the thing that they have, the shot of him at the retirement home, first as young Lee taking his meds and looking all zonked out, and then it cuts to him doing the same thing as older Lee up until G-Day, and it basically makes him look like he is just like zonked out for like from the 80s to 2015 or 2014, I guess. Yeah. You know, it's like he's just been medicated and not doing anything until that happened. And I kind of wish they hadn't done that, because I'd be a lot easier to accept that he was doing other stuff. Even if he's not actively going out there, the fact that he is just sitting there in the retirement home and not doing anything forever. And it also makes like Verdugo's attitude towards him and other people's attitudes towards him feel, because it feels like he was locked up for doing something big and bad. That's the kind of the sense that you've gotten before this a little bit, you know, like, oh, he's been like put away to pasture because he was like rutting too many cages or wouldn't. But that's not what happened. He was like a good soldier, followed orders, and came back and got thrust there. And that's it. He didn't other than taking, you know, he took someone hostage briefly, but you know, the way that Verdugo talks about him, he's doing what he loves to do, throwing fires on things he doesn't understand. Like, what about that matches with the Lee's service history before all of this? I don't know. It again, there's just feels like there's something not quite connecting between Lee's story that we've been told and Lee's actions and how people view Lee.
Yeah, and I guess this potentially does go back to, is there other stuff that we're not seeing? And I do think the show is trying to represent that, like, it's more his ideas that are being cast out and his, like, beliefs than his actions. Because to your point, I don't know that anyone has ever explicitly said, like, you've been locked up for what you did, or you like did something terribly wrong. I think that it has kind of been explicitly stated, like, you pushed too hard, or like your beliefs, or like you know, you are too radical, or like your ideology is different from the way that Monarch at least functions in the present, whatever that present might be when he was getting chastised. So I do think it's more of like an ideology, and it could be along those lines of he tried to push, which is the only thing that happens here in this is the conversation with him and Hiroshi, where he's like, listen, Bill Randa knew exactly what was going on. He was right. He was right about absolutely everything. And Hiroshi's like, what do you mean? He's like crazy. He's like, he was right about everything, and we can prove it together. We can figure this out. We can find the truth together. And Hiroshi's like, no, Gramps, I'm sending you to a home, even though you're younger than me. I'm sending you to a retirement home, and this is what's going on here. First of all, just savage from Hiroshi. And to your point of what you were saying earlier, we have to see next episode the evolution of this Hiroshi to the Hiroshi that we've been seeing consistently, and then we'll talk about it just a little bit, because that is there's a cavern between those two that is massive. Like, not even just like we need to find some little path to get across here. This is opposite of A to A. Like, we could not be going in further different directions. And my biggest question that I have going into the finale here, will that change happen with or because of Lee? How will Lee be involved in that change, or will he be? I feel like he has to be, it just in some capacity, because I don't know what else. I don't know what else does it. Like, maybe he sees the files that Lee is working on, or has like found some scientific whatever study of, or does some experiment and finds like, oh, maybe he wasn't crazy and he was telling the truth and looks into it. But like, Lee is fully pushing for this thing that seemingly Hiroshi is going to get turned on to and change his beliefs radically, like 180 degrees radically. How involved is Lee in that? And that to me is the missing puzzle piece of Hiroshi, who unfortunately I do not find compelling as a character. Hiroshi is like the least interesting person on this whole show to me, which kind of feels bad a little bit because he's like such a big plot point. But that to me is like the big puzzle piece that's missing here. How do we get from this Hiroshi at the end of this 1980s scene to present day Hiroshi, who is going all over the place in Alaska, carving pencils like a freaking wooden statue? Like, how do we get between these Hiroshis?
Yeah, I agree that that's what we need to see. Because at this point, he's basically, like I said, like, he thinks that his dad was crazy. And Lee's like, we weren't crazy. He's like, if you weren't crazy, then it was a choice. And that's even worse. Which is like, ooh. Which, you know, then fast forward to 2015 and the choices he has made and how it's impacted his kids. I guess the thing with Hiroshi is he grew up without a family. It's like, okay, I didn't have any family growing up. Well, now I'm going to have two families. I'm going to have two families now. If one gets taken away from me, I have a spare. I have a backup family in case something happens to one.
Which one was the backup though, Todd? We don't, I mean, my gosh. Jeez. Probably Kentaro. That would be my choice for the, actually, you know what? I'm just going to, little spoiler for where we're going to flash to next. Kentaro fully gets me back on board, actually, this episode. I could not be a bigger Kentaro fan after this episode. Okay, let's take a quick ad break, and we will come back in the year of our Lord Godzilla 2015.
Discover why critics are calling Kingdom of the Planet of the Apes the best film of the franchise.
What a wonderful day!
It's a jaw-dropping spectacle that demands to be seen on the biggest screen possible.
We need to go.
Hang on.
It is our time.
Kingdom of the Planet of the Apes, now playing only in theaters. Rated PG-13. Some material may be inappropriate for children under 13.
It's Kaylee Cuoco for Priceline. Ready to go to your happy place for a happy price? Well, why didn't you say so? Just download the Priceline app right now and save up to 60% on hotels. So whether it's Cousin Kevin's Kazoo Concert in Kansas City, go Kevin! Or Becky's Bachelorette Bash in Bermuda, you never have to miss a trip ever again. So download the Priceline app today. Your savings are waiting.
Go to your happy place for a happy price. Go to your happy price, Priceline.
Hello, it is Ryan, and we could all use an extra bright spot in our day, couldn't we? Just to make up for things like sitting in traffic, doing the dishes, counting your steps, you know, all the mundane stuff. That is why I'm such a big fan of Chumba Casino. Chumba Casino has all your favorite social casino style games that you can play for free anytime, anywhere with daily bonuses. That should brighten your day a little. Actually, a lot. So sign up now at chumbacasino.com. That's chumbacasino.com.
No purchase necessary. VGW Group. Void where prohibited by law. See terms and conditions. 18 plus.
Hello, it is Ryan, and we could all use an extra bright spot in our day, couldn't we? Just to make up for things like sitting in traffic, doing the dishes, counting your steps, you know, all the mundane stuff. That is why I'm such a big fan of Chumba Casino. Chumba Casino has all your favorite social casino-style games that you can play for free anytime, anywhere with daily bonuses. That should brighten your day a little. Actually, a lot. So sign up now at chumbacasino.com. That's ChumbaCasino.com.
No purchase necessary. VGW. Void where prohibited by law. See terms and conditions. 18 plus.
Okay, round two. Name something that's not boring.
A laundry? Ooh, a book club. Computer solitaire, huh?
Ah, oh, sorry. We were looking for Chumba Casino. That's right. ChumbaCasino.com has over 100 casino-style games. Join today and play for free for your chance to redeem some serious prizes. ChumbaCasino.com.
No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus. Terms and conditions apply. See website for details.
Okay, we're back. It's 2015. Present day, if you will. We see Kentaro. He's waking up in a hospital in Tokyo. He's all wrapped up. He's, you know, on a bed. It's all kind of a mess. Obviously, you know, things are bad. Tim is on crutches and still in the hospital room, you know, trucking along. Freaking Tim, man. And Tim and Verdugo basically tell him, okay, well, Shaw blew the rift, which is maybe not good, but Kate and May and Shaw did not make it out like you did and like I did, unfortunately. So, not great. Immediate news here, and Kentaro's like, well, what can I do? I want to do, they're my family, even though I didn't know them before like 10 seconds ago. They're my family. I have to do something. Why can't I do something? And they're just like, hey, very similar to how the Puckett in the past was basically like, maybe just live. Just focus on living. And Verdugo's like, just freaking live, Kentaro. Stop trying to die and like destroy everything you have here. Don't you realize how destructive this is? Just live. You're done. Your life here in Monarch is done. And of course I'm like, no, it's not. Like, obviously yeah. It's not. Of course, you know, this is Kentaro we're talking about. Please, man on a mission.
Yeah. One of the questions I had at the end of last episode is, are they going to think that they're in the Hollow Earth? Or are they going to assume that they're dead? And apparently the answer is they're going to assume that they're dead, which understandable.
Yeah. Well, I think it's understandable for some of them. I think Kentaro maybe takes it a step too far here at some point. But anyway, he goes back home and talks with his mom and basically is like, how am I supposed to go back to living a normal life? And I do think his mom kind of has some interesting lines in this interaction. I sort of like the closeness here between the two of them. And it's not necessarily something that I was missing, but the concept of having Hiroshi having to go, not having to, but choosing to go between two families here in two like very, very different locations would naturally be that Kentaro would spend more time with his mom, right? Without that, you know, yeah. That would be a closer relationship. And I do think that came through here in a way that we had not seen Kate and her mom interact previously. So I actually kind of did enjoy this scene. And she's even like, well, okay, we can go back to normal life, but you have to like allow yourself to feel this loss and like to feel these things in order to be able to move on and to you know, to get back to life. I liked this from Kentaro's mom and from Kentaro, like, you know, kind of opening up and explaining how he feels a little bit.
Yeah. It reminded me of the scene early on where, you know, she starts ripping up the pictures of his dad to kind of get him to, you know, start to let his emotions out a little bit and to show that she's upset as well about everything. Yeah, we haven't got a whole lot of Emiko, but everything we've got from her has been really great, whether it's like her like taking Kate in immediately or her trying to help Kentaro through that, her supporting him in the art show, her distracting Tim and Duval so Kentaro can escape. Just everything we've seen from Emiko, it's like really, really great stuff. And I think that's an interesting point you said, like, you know, both Kate and Kentaro grew up with a semi-absent father. And for Kentaro, it pushed him closer to his mom. But for Kate, I feel like Kate got pushed further from her mom a little bit. Kate and her mom, I think it's kind of a mothers and daughters thing, probably a little bit more than anything else. Yeah. But I think they both like yearned for their dad's love. But Kentaro like just turned to his mom for that love in you know, as a substitute, whereas Kate just wanted her dad's love, and her mom's love was not good enough for her. It's kind of like the sense we got, because almost every scene we get between Kate and her mom up until like the very end, whenever she tells her mom that she's alive, you know, Kate is like, you know, butting heads with her mom. And part of that might just be like fallout from Hiroshi disappearing, but I also kind of feel like it was probably that way regardless.
Yeah, Hiroshi disappearing, and then obviously in terms of G-Day itself, Kate had a much different experience than Kentaro did with the whole, you know, the whole situation that we've kind of been flashing back to there. But we're back at Monarch headquarters, and this other agent, I see you have written in here Barnes, but I certainly could not have told you that name. Barnes discovers that while all of these gamma bursts are increasing after we closed the one of them stayed constant, that very first one, and they realize someone is trying to send a message. And I alluded to this before. This is instantly when I'm like, okay, so Keiko was alive. Like, you know, at this point, it's like someone's trying to send a message from inside the Hollow Earth with these gamma radiations. I wonder who that could be. Again, this is sort of where I ask, should we have been thinking this more throughout the series? Because like you said before, we did talk about it in episode one, but I don't think the show has been leaving any kind of breadcrumbs here. And I'm not necessarily mad about that. I'm kind of okay with a big twist coming nearish to the end of a show like this. Like, that's actually fine with me. I don't need more breadcrumbs for this before. I'm just curious if we missed them. That's what I'm curious about, is if we missed anything where we should be like, maybe she is. I don't know.
I don't know that we have missed anything really overt, because pretty much everything is, you know, the last thing they showed us was her getting dragged away. And every reference to her since then has been she died. Like, everyone has said she's died. No. We have not, up until this episode, this is the first episode that has had a flashback post. You know, it's like the time frame has moved past the first episode's flashback. It was the first time that we've seen a young Lee and young Billy after Keiko's disappearance. And so there hasn't been anything that has really led us to believe. There's been no mention of no body was found, no mention of anything like that. It's always been your grandmother died, she died ever since she lost Keiko. There's never been anything to really suggest that I can recall that she might be alive. I don't know there's really been any breadcrumbs to make someone think this, other than the traditional, we haven't seen a body. That seems to be like the big thing. Like, if you haven't seen a body, there's a good possibility they're alive on, you know, TV shows. But outside of that, and there might be something glaring that I'm missing. I mean, the fact that neither one of us like picked up on them doesn't mean they weren't there.
Yeah.
You know, someone out there listening could like reach out to us, let us know, is there anything that we missed? Please let us know. But nothing is coming to mind. So I'm like going back and thinking through all the interactions they've had regarding Keiko and even regarding the Hollow Earth and all of that sort of stuff. There really hasn't been anything that I can think of that would suggest before now that she might be alive.
Yeah, the only thing that I could even like remotely think of is the letter that they found. I think it was either last episode or the episode before, of this death benefits letter that Lee filled out to get the benefits to Bill, because Keiko is dead, and like that's sort of how they decided to go to Afghanistan, where they knew Lee was going to be. But even that, it's not like that's an obvious, you know, like maybe she's alive situation. That was just sort of a clue to the current location of where Lee was going, less than Keiko. So anyway, it was in that moment where I was like, okay, well, Keiko's got to be alive. And so they figure that out. And then we go to Kentaro, who is searching his father's office, because even though he was explicitly told your time with Monarch is done, you're done with this thing, you can't do it anymore, you're gonna die, he's still looking in his father's office, and friggin' Hiroshi walks in, strolls into the office like he hasn't been on the run for the past year with double family and saw them in the desert when Godzilla was there, and just drove off and apparently attracted Godzilla, but then he's here. Whatever. He's in the office. He shows up and he's like, hey, let me explain. I want to explain what's going on here. Okay, just give me the opportunity to explain. And Kotaro's like, well, it's too late to explain. You freaking dirty liar. You old dirty liar, man. You can't explain because Kate's dead. And then Hiroshi starts breaking down. Okay. part of this is like, obviously, like, you're going to have an emotional reaction when you find out that your daughter is dead and your secret other son who didn't know about your daughter, like, is telling you that he's dead. And then he's like, you're just saying that to hurt me. You're just saying that she's dead because you're trying to hurt me like I hurt you. First of all, Hiroshi, you're the one with two families. What do you mean? Why would he be saying this to hurt you? The fact that there is a K in existence hurts him. What are you talking about, Hiroshi? Like, this is just makes no sense whatsoever. And then he like has an emotional breakdown and tries to like get comforted by Kentaro. This is the other family. Like, Hiroshi drives me nuts here. Like, he isn't the one that is in the wrong completely. And I will say, one of the things that I half hope we get next episode, but also kind of half hope we really, really don't, because I just won't care. I would like to know what in his mind was the reason why he has two families. Like, I would really like to hear him be like, well, I just fell in love with two women and I don't know. Whatever reason he has or like thinks he has, I need to hear any kind of explanation. Because it genuinely sounds like he was just bad to everyone. Like, it really sounds like he was just a bad dad and an irresponsible and flaky husband and father, like, to everyone involved, was just leaving all the time, coming at wild hours, missing things. And even the science stuff, because it's not like we've been shown like what he was actually doing in the desert, presumably to, you know, catch Godzilla or attract Godzilla lure him from. Like, I don't understand Hiroshi at all, and I think that's like not necessarily a problem with the show, but if I'm supposed to get on board for let's finish this series strong with Hiroshi, who is like the major plot point, that's how we started this whole thing, was where's Hiroshi, what's going on, what was he looking into, what are these files, I don't like Hiroshi. Am I supposed to like Hiroshi?
No, I don't think you're supposed to like Hiroshi. I mean, the kids don't even like Hiroshi. Like, they're both like very upset. I think Lee still likes Hiroshi, but that's about it, more than likely. I think my favorite thing about this whole sequence is just how cold Kentaro is to him through the entire thing.
Yeah.
Like whenever he first shows up, Kentaro's like, you have more important things to do than to check that we made it out of the desert alive. It's just like this. And then after he does a little breakdown, Kentaro's just like, if you weren't a sad, lying, secret little man who kept running away from her, Kate never would have come barging into my life. This is all your fault. That's basically like the end.
Where's the lie, Todd? Yeah. That's what I'm saying. Like, where's the lie?
There is no lie there. I mean, that really, really is like the truth, that Hiroshi set this all in motion. And I think, you know, we talk about trying to figure out what changed Hiroshi, and I realize it's the Randa files that changed for Hiroshi, because Randa files, if you remember, like Bill threw them off Skull Island in the 70s, and then we saw a shot of them getting picked up in 2013. So my guess is in 2013, Bill's files made their way to Hiroshi, and he started looking at his dad's research, and that led him down this path. So like Hiroshi, like going off all rogue and stuff, was put in motion by the Randa files. That's kind of my guess about what the inciting incident was there. You said, I don't understand what he's doing in the desert. I don't know if Hiroshi understood what he's doing in the desert. All he says is something went wrong. I don't know what. So what he was trying to do, don't know for sure. Just know that he was unsuccessful.
Yeah, I mean, the only thing I can think of, and it's just based on the ending, which we'll talk about here in just a second, is there a world where he's, like, trying to get Keiko back by opening up a portal to like, have access to that? Like, is that the motivation here of trying to attract a Titan to a place because that's how they did it when Lee went down? And so maybe trying to attract a Titan to a portal because he thinks Keiko, like, I don't know. Like, I'm really grasping at straws here, because even if it's that, it's not clear. Like, it's not presented. But I outside of just being like a storm watcher where you're tracking tornadoes, like, I don't understand why he would be trying to lure a Titan anywhere. Like, yeah. I don't get it.
Yeah, I don't either. And we don't know. how much he knows about, because we know that he's been tracking the gamma bursts and things like that. That's what he's been going to, where all these rifts are. We don't know if he knows that they're getting stronger. We don't know if he knows now that, you know, Lee's closing them off, they're getting even worse. We don't know how much information he has, how much of the data that Monarch has does he actually have himself? How much is he just going off of the Randa files? We know that he did task satellites to scan the Earth for gamma signatures, but that's never, he got booted from Monarch for doing that. So we don't know how current his information is, if he's able to see this pattern beforehand. So we don't know if, is he trying to stabilize the portal so he can go to the Hollow Earth, and he's like checking out different ones to find the best one, or does he realize that they are, you know, about to erupt, and he is in the same camp as Lee and his parents, thinking that Godzilla is going to be their savior. We just don't know.
Yeah, and it's also interesting because, like, part of the reason we get to Lee is because Kentaro has heard about Lee. So, like, it was more like he's paying rent for the thing. I don't even.
Yeah, but he only found out Lee because he, like, found, like, Hiroshi's files. And that is it, because Hiroshi has never mentioned Lee to Kentaro. And Emiko just, like, mentions, oh, yeah, they used to be really close, they're falling out a long time ago.
When were they? When he was like six? Like, is that when? That when they were close? That's the okay. I mean, I guess. Certainly Lee would be more present in her mind if she was held at knife point by him with the knife that gave him. What am I trying to say? No, that was right.
And I don't think it was actually not knife point. He just like wrapped a cord around her neck because he didn't get the knife until afterwards.
Oh, okay. Well, you know, still not a situation that you would be in, but certainly something you'd remember. I just don't get it. I'm assuming, like we said before, I'm assuming next episode's going to be the Hiroshi episode. So we'll certainly talk about it there if it does happen. The problem, and this is maybe not actually a problem, but rather just my inability, I can't put together enough pieces in my head that would make sense to me where I'm going to feel good about the way that it resolves. It doesn't mean it's not possible. It just means that I can't think of it. So we'll see. We'll see what Apple TV can come up with, because maybe it does. Maybe it does come together in a way that it's satisfying. What is satisfying, though, at least for me, is when we are flashing down into the Hollow Earth, because I really love the look of this. So we're going down. A lot of this episode is sort of told through Lee's talking to May and explaining some of the stuff from the past. And I was like, so that's how it went. And we finished our flashback there. So Lee's waking up in this Hollow Earth and basically start, calling for Kate. He finds May, though, who is really having trouble with her senses. And Lee's like, okay, well, this happened. This happens. Your eyesight's going to be kind of screwed up for a little while. And she's like, how do you know? Well, because it happened to me when I was there first. So there's energy discharge, et cetera, whatever. And then, you know, that's sort of how the episode is told through some of these flashbacks here. They keep, you know, leading past, this forest, which is really beautiful, actually. And there are energy bursts kind of all over the place. And basically it's like, that's an after, an effect here, a side effect of these rifts closing. That's just what happens. And I know, again, cause I was here. I was here. I've been down here more or less, and that's how it goes. And we get to see that a little bit. Welcome back to the Hollow Earth. Lee just can't keep him away. Can't keep this guy out of here. Big Hollow Earth guy.
Yeah, I'm not sure if it's 100% his choice, though.
Destiny, one of them was, that's for sure. The first one was his choice. The
first one was very much his choice. In the very Lee, I have to do this because I can't ask anyone else to do something I wouldn't do type of way. So he kind of, gotta stop that. But this one was not his choice, but he was trying to rescue Kate. And it's interesting that May, who fell quite a long time before Kate and Lee fell, and then Lee, who was holding on to Kate when they fell, somehow May and Lee wind up close to each other, but Kate is nowhere to be seen. Not quite sure the logistics of all that, but again, the space says weird things when Titans are around, so I guess just, deal with that.
Yeah, Hollow Earth be Hollow Earth, and that's all I know. I did think it was interesting, the Lee and May stuff. It's not a pair that I had really expected to see, and even in the previous interactions, it has been much more of a focus on Lee and the Randa kids than it has the Lee and May stuff. And so I didn't mind this pairing, actually. But it does sort of lead to my question of how are we going to resolve this? Because the other pairing that we're going to have here is Kate, who is, you know, wandering around trying to figure out what's going on. She encounters like this, you know, this pig boar titan situation, and she starts crawling around and it begins to charge at her and gets shot in the head. And then it just runs away. It's not actually killed, just shot in the head with like an arrow by Keiko. We talked about this kind of a lot already throughout this podcast, because this is the big reveal at the end. But where we're ending this time, okay, in the Hollow Earth, we have Kate and Keiko, which already is a very interesting combination and pairing down there. We have Lee and May. Okay, they're both in the Hollow Earth, different places. Presumably, in my mind, they're going to meet up in some capacity. That foursome is going to get together some way, somehow, and send a signal out, because we know that Monarch is trying to signal. That's basically all we saw of Monarch this episode in the 2015 present day, was that a signal is being sent out. We saw a little bit of like Tim and Verdugo talking to Kintara, but like not really. That's really their whole thing, is tracking the signal that's coming out from down there. Then we have Kintaro and Hiroshi, who are also seemingly united here in some capacity, although it's a little rocky in terms of what's going on over there, because Kentaro is like spitting facts at Hiroshi, and whatever, he doesn't really want to hear that, and he's crying like a little baby about his second secret family, even though he didn't tell it, whatever. So they're all together in some capacity. However, the thing that we know to be true is that those in the Hollow Earth are aging differently, because notably Keiko still looks like 55 is when she went in. There are so many years. Whatever. Mid 1955,
56, something like that.
Something like that. And obviously,
let me check my notes.
Yeah.
It's, 1959 right. Is whenever the original flashback was.
59. She still looks to be that age. Not certainly not aged at all, although we do see her in a new, you know, outfit situation here. And obviously, in my mind, it looks as though she has spent some time down here and has some ability to craft weapons and masters stuff, and has like some knowledge and experience of stuff down here. We'll see what that actually means, just extrapolating out how long Lee was down there versus how much time he actually spent in the Hollow Earth. I don't know. Maybe that math is funky, and we can.
I don't think it's a one to one. Yeah, I don't think it's a one to one correlation. I don't think that there is an actual mathematical equation. Okay, 1 second here equals 1 year there, or anything like that. Because again, like the whole Godzilla vs. Kong of it all, there was like no time slippage that we saw between the people who went to the Hollow Earth and afterwards. You know, so we didn't see any time slippage from that. Definitely nothing to this degree, and they were in the Hollow Earth for a good amount of time, at least as long as Lee was down there.
Certainly.
So that's my big question, is I don't know for sure how that's all going to work out. I don't know how they're going to explain it away. I do think it's just going to be like a timey-wimey, you know, time is weird in the Hollow Earth, and for Keiko it's been like forever, but now we're here, now we're going to get out, and for us it's only been like a day or so. Or maybe they're only there for 30 minutes and it's been like a couple of weeks. I don't know. I don't think there's going to be like a massive amount of time between when they go in the hole and when they get out. I don't think it's going to be like a big thing like that. But
you don't think so?
I don't think so.
Okay. Because I have a couple different theories here before we get to the finale. Number one, we're going to time jump. I think it'd be interesting to go forward. Let's flash forward 50 years and do something, do a little scene there. I don't think it's very likely. I think you're probably right about the lack of time jump here. What if we did, though? I think it'd be interesting to have a time jump where we have Keiko from 59 comes back out in 2059 and looks the same, but now Kentaro's like an old man and is somehow like older than Lee, who comes out looking just as young as he has before. And now Kate is like, yeah, Kate and May are still young, but then Kentaro's old. I don't know. A time jump could be interesting to play with. I don't know that we have the capital to actually explore that in a meaningful way, though.
Yeah, I think it's an interesting idea. And if it was like a more long form series that we knew there's going to be like more seasons planned or something like that, I might be a little bit more open to that. But the fact that it's not a self-contained series, it is part of the MonsterVerse at large. And so I don't think they're going to want to have like a massive time jump.
No.
Because that could like contradict things later on down the line. And also, we only have one episode left.
Yeah.
And the one episode left needs to be devoted to stopping the emergence of the Titans, you know, stopping these gamma bursts increasing in frequency and power and whatever that signifies, this, you know, G-Day times 1,000. We need to be focused on that. So my thought is basically Keiko's been sending signals somehow. We have to assume the signals are coming from Keiko. If the signals are not coming from Keiko, then I don't know what we're doing here. But somehow Keiko has managed to send signals somehow from the Hollow Earth. And so my thought is that somehow they're going to work together to kind of use her knowledge to stabilize things. And that will also link up their time and the current time, and they'll come through. And so no time will have slipped. That's something that is a possibility to me. I think that it'd be an interesting idea to have another time jump, and there are other shows that could do that. But this being a show that is tied directly into the MonsterVerse, I don't really see them doing a massive, massive time jump. No, maybe jumping to the Godzilla vs. Kong of all, but I feel like the fact that there is, you know, Hollow Earth travel in Godzilla vs. Kong, I feel like this all has to have been resolved before then. Otherwise, again, what are we doing here?
Well, resolved before then, and I think that could mean a couple different things, is sort of the result here. The other theory, it's really not a theory, but I think it would be interesting. What if, instead of them coming out in a time jump forward, what if it was a time jump backward? What if, when you left the Hollow Earth by whatever, it wasn't necessarily jumping you forward, because we've only really seen Lee leave, right? And that was a time jump forward. What if it's just, we're messing with time. There are different exits and entrances to the Hollow Earth that could spit out at various times. And if we pick the right or whatever, we pick a specific entrance or exit. What if we went back to 1960, whatever? I don't think we're going to do this. I don't think we're going to mess with time. This is not Doctor Who. We're not going to go back and do some crazy things. But what if we just started playing with time like crazy? You know, what if we just like did some weird stuff?
Yeah, that's an interesting idea. Again, I don't think that's where this is headed. I don't think they want to go full time travel with this. I think that opens up a too big of a can of worms for everything. I think it's going to be a much more contained event for like what causes the time slippage. But I feel like they're not going to be like trying to use it as a catalyst for like, oh, we can go forward or backwards in time. I feel like it's probably just gonna be like, oh yeah, just time doesn't quite line up, and so you might slip forward or not. But I don't know, we'll see.
Okay, Todd, the final thing that I want to do here before we get into the final episode, I want us to do a very quick little mini draft. We're going to each take a couple different characters of who is going to resolve the story the best. Who is going to be responsible for resolving the story? I don't know what that means. I don't even know what the parameters are here. And we'll just kind of have to agree to it next episode. Basically, who is going to solve the problems that are going to be solved next episode? So that could be getting out of the Hollow Earth, that could be finding them, that could be, I don't know, it could be whatever we decide is going to be next episode. I'm just curious who we think is going to solve the problem. Let's each take three people. And you want to go first, or do you want to snake draft and take the next two picks?
Let's see, I'll go first.
All right, who's your 1-1 here of who's going to solve the problems?
I mean, I gotta go with Keiko. I mean, the dramatic reveal, Keiko's been the big brain the entire time. She's figuring out how to send signals from down below. Keiko Randa has got to be like my number one draft pick for who is going to be able to resolve things.
Okay. I think that's a very strong pick here. Okay. I have two picks in a row. Number one, give me Lee. I think Lee has to be a big part of this. I certainly think that Lee is going to play a massive role here. And then my number two pick, this is really tough because I want to pick Hiroshi based on the fact that I think he's actually going to do it, but I kind of refuse to have him on my team because I just really don't like him. So I'm gonna give that away, and instead I'm gonna pick a character that I unabashedly love. Give me Tim. Tim is gonna solve our problems. I don't know how. I don't know what he's gonna do or figure it out. Tim has to be involved. He's been too involved the previous 9 episodes. Give me freaking Tim.
Honestly, those are going to be my next two picks. So now I'm having to scramble. I mean, especially Lee. I feel like Lee felt like, he's been such a big presence, even though he's throwing gasoline on fires that he doesn't know what's going to do. He's still doing stuff. And Tim, yeah, the odds of Tim actually being the one to do it is probably pretty slim. But Tim has also been like kind of the one in Monarch's ear going, hey, I'm the tone of the basement. I'm the one you should be listening to. But Tim got that way from listening to his mentor, Hiroshi. So I got to go with Hiroshi. I feel like he is like, I feel like this, the story that we'll get next episode will probably be him learning to do all this stuff. And it will lead him to actually, even if it's just like him working with his mom, that will lead him that way.
I think that tracks. That's the chalk pick for me. I think that Hiroshi is the next kind of obvious choice here.
Yeah,
I just don't like him.
Yeah, I mean, understandable. Going with head over heart here, because if it was heart, there are like several other characters I'd be picking before I picked Hiroshi. So for my last pick, I'm torn between the two Randa kids. I feel like one of the Randa kids has to be like really involved here. And my heart is saying Kate, because Kate is my favorite of the two Randa kids. But I feel like Kentaro's the one who's actually like trying to be proactive in the real world, and he's the one who might be able to push things through. But I don't want to pick Kentaro. I'm kind of in the same boat as you with Hiroshi. He's like, I really don't want to pick Kentaro, even though he was a baller this episode. I loved how stone cold he was with his dad. I thought that was really good. I'm happy that he finally got over his whiny period and now is his like let's get crap done period. It's about time, Kentaro. Give me Kentaro. Give me Kentaro. Let's see if that stone cold Kentaro at the end is going to manifest in actually getting some shit done.
Yeah, I do think that's very interesting here. I feel like I have to take Kate here as the final pick. I was also between the two Randa kids, but it will be interesting because we have these pairings, right? We have Lee and Kate, and it's not that both of them can't do things, but I do feel like with each of these pairings, one person is going to sort of excel. I'm sorry, it's Lee and they, not Lee and Kate. It's Kate and Keiko, and I kind of agree with you. If one of the two of them is going to do it, it's going to be Keiko is the one kind of moving the ball forward. We have Kentaro and Hiroshi. In my mind, I think Hiroshi is probably going to be the one moving forward. We have Lee and May. It's so tough to pick May in that situation because I sort of feel like May's storyline is over, outside of being sort of a narrative piece to explain information to when we need some exposition. I think that May is probably done here. So give me Kate. I do think that the Keiko combination could be very interesting over there. Okay, that's it for us until the finale, the season one finale of Monarch Legacy of Monsters. Todd, any final predictions you want to make before the end of this season?
No, I think my not so much prediction, my hope. My hope is that the thing we talk about a lot will happen, that this will set up the Monarch monitoring stations, that this will set up the status quo for Godzilla, King of Monsters. I'm not as confident in that being where it lands as I was a few episodes ago, based on where we are right now. But that's kind of like the only prediction I have left is that it will somehow end with them discovering these other Titans, whether it's the Titans are emerging and then all get like shut down and go dormant or whatever. Cause that's basically what was happening in Godzilla King of Monsters. Like most of the Titans, they found all these Titans that were dormant on the Earth. So maybe that's what will happen. The Titans will start to emerge and they will do something that will like make them all go night, night. That's my prediction.
Okay, the two other predictions I have, and they're, maybe flyers here. I think we're going to see at least two new Titans in the final episode. New Titans that we had either not seen before or were not named or that we hadn't talked about. Two new Titans in the final episode. And I think one of our main characters is going to die. I don't know who, but I'm someone's going to die. Give me a death in the final episode. Keep it spicy. Keep it interesting. Todd, that's it for us here for season one, episode 9 of Monarch Legacy of Monsters. We'll be back next week to talk about the finale, which I'm very excited about. Very excited to continue this conversation and to finish off our coverage here on Post-Show Recaps of Monarch Legacy of Monsters. Of course, subscribe to the podcast, postshowrecaps.com/subscribe. But Todd, in the meantime, what are you up to these days? Where can people find you?
You can find me on most social media platforms as Librarian Todd, because Todd Librarian was too many characters. You can also find me over on One Indescribable Podcast, where Adam, TV Lindy, and I are going through different musical TV series. We are starting our coverage of Girls 5 Eva Season 2. That should drop this weekend. And we also have another new project that should also be dropping this week. Adam, should we go ahead and reveal that?
Absolutely. Yeah, go for it.
Yeah. So a few weeks ago on a One in a Scroll podcast, our guest Marissa posited the idea, like, wouldn't it be interesting to do a podcast that recaps a show only by watching the previously ons? And we were like, that does sound like an interesting idea. So we have launched Previous Little Liars, where the four of us are going through Pretty Little Liars. I'm the only one who's actually seen Pretty Little Liars. So Adam, Lindy, and Marissa are only watching Pretty Little Liars based on the previously ons for each episode, and then trying to figure out what the heck is going on in that show and trying to predict what is going to happen. We have a few in the can. It's been a lot of fun. It's been really hard for me to keep a straight face listening to some of the predictions they're making. So if you're a Pretty Little Liars fan, it can be a fun time.
It's very fun. It's very interesting. We've recorded quite a few thus far, and it's a lot of fun. It's very interesting positing ideas for what could be going on, because sometimes the previous ones just don't make any sense. And as I've been told by Sarah, who absolutely loves the show, sometimes the episodes themselves don't make sense, even if you're watching the whole thing front to back. So, you know, who's to say? I'm Adam H. You can find me on Twitter at PNMAnAdam1, as well as over on One Australia Podcast. That's One CXG Podcast on Twitter. In the post-show recap space, I'm talking Doctor Who with Kevin and Melissa. That's a ton of fun. Talking Final Fantasy IX with the amazing Brooklyn Zed, as well as Percy Jackson, the new Disney Plus series, over with Melissa as well. But of course, Todd, you and I will be back together next week to talk about the finale, Season 1, Episode 10, the finale of Monarch, Legacy of Monsters. And until then,
it is Ryan here, and I have a question for you. What do you do when you win? Like, are you a fist pumper, a woohooer, a hand clapper, a high fiver? I kind of like the high five, but if you want to hone in on those winning moves, check out Chumba Casino. At ChumbaCasino.com, choose from hundreds of social casino style games for your chance to redeem serious cash prizes. There are new game releases weekly, plus free daily bonuses. So don't wait. Start having the most fun ever at ChumbaCasino.com.
No purchase necessary. VGW. Void or prohibited by law. See terms and conditions. 18 plus.
It's time for today's Lucky Land horoscope with Victoria Cash.
Life's gotten mundane, so shake up the daily routine and be adventurous with a trip to Lucky Land. You know what they say, your chance to win starts with a spin. So go to LuckyLandSlots.com to play over 100 social casino-style games for free for your chance to redeem some serious prizes. Get lucky today at LuckyLandSlots.com.
Available to players in the U.S., excluding Washington and Michigan. No purchase necessary. VGW Group. Void or prohibited by law. 18 plus. Terms and conditions apply.
Hello, it is Ryan, and I was on a flight the other day playing one of my favorite social spin slot games on ChumbaCasino.com. I looked over at the person sitting next to me, and you know what they were doing? They were also playing Chumba Casino. Coincidence? I think not. Everybody's loving having fun with it. Chumba Casino is home to hundreds of casino-style games that you can play for free anytime, anywhere, even at 30,000 feet. So sign up now at ChumbaCasino.com to claim your free welcome bonus. That's ChumbaCasino.com and live the Chumba life.
No purchase necessary. VGW. Void or prohibited by law. See terms and conditions. 18 plus.
Hello, it is Ryan, and we could all use an extra bright spot in our day, couldn't we? Just to make up for things like sitting in traffic, doing the dishes, counting your steps, you know, all the mundane stuff. That is why I'm such a big fan of Chumba Casino. Chumba Casino has all your favorite social casino-style games that you can play for free anytime, anywhere with daily bonuses. That should brighten your day a little. Actually, a lot. So sign up now at ChumbaCasino.com. That's ChumbaCasino.com.
No purchase necessary. VGW. Void where prohibited by law. See terms and conditions. 18 plus.